Thank you, Mr. Robertson. Our first public hearing is 2017-20, The Grove at Love Creek, J.G. Townsend Jr. and Company.
This is a cluster subdivision, ESDDOZ subdivision. The cluster ESDDOZ subdivision proposes to subdivide 200.69 acres, plus or minus, into 247 single-family lots with amenities and site improvements to be located on a certain parcel of land lying in being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County. The property is located on the west sides of Ward Road, Road 283A, and Cedar Grove Road, and east of Mulberry Knoll Road, Road 284. The subdivision is zoned AR1 Agricultural Residential District and GR General Residential District. The 911 address is not available. The tax map is District 334, Map 12, Parcel 16. Staff would note that it now has a new name, and it is now known as Fieldstone. We've also received comments. We also have, for the record, we'll submit into the record a site plan and exhibit booklet. It went through the technical advisory committee, so we have comments from the Sussex Conservation District, the Delaware Co-op, DENREC, the Division of Watershed Stewardship, the Groundwater Discharge and Fish and Wildlife Divisions. We received comments from the Fire Marshal, Chesapeake Utilities, DelDOT, the Sussex County Engineering Department Utility Planning Division and the Public Works Division, and we also received comments from the mapping and addressing, which approved the name of Fieldstone. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cornwell. Is there anyone here representing this application, Mr. Byard?
And just while Mr. Byard's walking up, the name change, it was advertised under the Grove.
Yes.
That's not an issue as far as notice because the applicant's still the same and the application's still the same, so that's not a FOIA or notice issue, in my opinion.
Mr. Byers, anything you want to add beyond this four-inch book that you've...
No, that's not quite enough, Mr. Ross.
Okay, let's throw some
out. Is there a way to fire this up?
No. The screen.
Not one of the microphone. I'll do the best I can. Gene Byard on behalf of the landowner and applicant, J.G. Townsend Jr. and Company. I'll be brief, but the presentation may take a little time because there's a lot of heavy lifting to be done between Ring Lardner, the project engineer, and Ed Lanay, the environmental scientist. 4 years ago, you may recall, Mr. Ross, Mr. Wheatley would recall if you were here, the Love Creek campground application. That night in that hearing, the room was a little more crowded, and the hearing went only 4.5 hours. It's a different day. If you recall, the commission recommended approval of that application, including a change of zone and conditional use, but council denied the change of zone on the stated reason that GR land in this area of the county should be preserved for GR housing opportunities. That's why we're here. This is a GR housing opportunity with AR housing opportunities blended in. With a set of uniform restrictive covenants, it will be a development of quality. If you're curious about council's rationale for its vote, I included this tab 11, exhibit 11 in your package. It doesn't take long to read. What I'd like to do is turn Ring loose. He's got a lot to cover. There are other people here with other agenda items. Ring, if you want to come up and get going.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. My name is Ring Lardner, principal and professional engineer with the firm Davis Bone & Friedel, One Park Avenue, Milford, Delaware. To begin the presentation, I'd just like to quickly orient you to the location of the property. This is the property. It is located west of Mulberry Knoll Road, south of Cedar Grove Road, and south of Ward Road. It is also east of Love Creek, which is the water body along here, and north of the Hetty Fisher Glade, which is the water body in that general direction. All three roads, Mulberry Knoll Road, Cedar Grove Road, and Ward Road, are all classified as local roads according to the DelDOT Road Classification Map. Next, I'd like to point out a few things within the booklet itself. Tab A, which is the presentation outline. It's a bulleted list of various items that you will hear during tonight's presentation, either by myself, Mr. Lanay, or Mr. Hammonds. Tab B is a data column summarizing the use of the land. Tab C is the preliminary plan as first submitted. Tab D is the revised preliminary plan that addressed staff comments and significantly smaller than the original preliminary plan as we combined several sheets of paper together. Hence why this book's just a little bit thick. It's due to the size of the subdivision, not necessarily the voluminous information within there. Tabs E and F are color renderings. Exhibits 1 and 2 are various maps, which we'll go through in a few minutes. Exhibits 3 through 6 are various reports and code responses. Exhibit 7 is DLDOT's traffic impact study review letter for a previous application, of which, again, I'll explain more when I get to the traffic impact study. Exhibit 8 is a timber study. Exhibit 9 is an environmental report that Mr. Lene will review as part of his testimony. And exhibits 10 through 12 are just final piece of information for consideration by the commission. Before reviewing the actual subdivision itself, I'd like to review some of the maps found in Exhibit 1. The first map is the surrounding communities map, which I have up on the screen now. This map shows the project's proximity to various roadways and uses, in which Mr. Hammonds will explain more about the uses when he gets his presentation. The next map is the 2015 State Strategies map, of which this project is shown to be within both a Level 2 and Level 3 investment area. The project is consistent with both levels, as the design has accounted for the environmental features of the site, which is why it's predominantly Level 3 in this area. If it wasn't for some of the environmental features, I believe most of this would be all Level 2 investment area. The project is located in the environmentally sensitive developing district overlay zone. As shown in the hatched areas, these big squares, when you zoom in, it looks like a big hatch that's actually describing the entire sensitive area. We have prepared an environmental assessment and public facility evaluation report, and it is included in Exhibit 6. The report demonstrates that the applicant is able to mitigate detrimental impacts. That verbiage comes from the code, if anyone wanna know where that part came from. And the project complies with Chapter 115, Section 194.3 of the Sussex County Code. As seen on the zoning map, and as Mr. Byers alluded to, this project is split zoned between AR1, Agriculture Residential, and GR, General Residential. In a few minutes, I'll explain how this project complies with both zoning districts. This is a 1992 aerial showing various subdivisions, other land development that was approved today, but as you can see back then, little development had occurred in and around this project. And on the 2017 aerial photograph, this area has grown up quite a lot. There's a few maps that I did not submit as part of the exhibit to be presented in front of you, but they are within your booklet. The first map is an environmental map, and this map shows two key features. The first feature is the National Wetland Inventory Wetlands, that's in green. Environmental Resources Incorporated has performed a wetland delineation, and that delineation is clearly shown in our preliminary subdivision plan that's before you this evening. And the second key feature is the project is partially within a 100-year floodplain. The back portion, which is about right in this area here, is located within Zone AE that has a known flood elevation, and a portion is what's called the unshaded X, which is technically outside the 100-year floodplain, but they do have some caveats for informational purposes. The final portion is this little piece of the Hetty Fisher Glade and its unnamed tributary. That is located within Zone A, where no base flood elevation has been established. There are about a dozen lots shown within the 100-year floodplain. It is our intent to design the sites of the lots. Will be located at an elevation above the floodplain, and this project will comply with Chapter 115, Section 141.4 of the Sussex County Code. This project was reviewed by PLUS on June 28, 2007. A written response to their comments was prepared and submitted on March 12, 2018. And they can be found in Exhibit 3 of the booklet. The comments, for the most part, were the typical comments by the various agencies. However, there were some comments regarding the wooded areas and drainage features, again, which Mr. Lene will address as part of his presentation. The preliminary plan enclosed in tab C was submitted to the county on November 2nd, 2017, and was subsequently reviewed by the Technical Advisory Committee, which Ms. Cornwell had mentioned as part of her opening statement. The type comments were, again, were typical from the various agencies. However, similar to PLUS, there were comments regarding wooded areas and drainage features, again, which Mr. Lene will address. A written response to those type comments was provided on March 12, 2018, and are included in Exhibit 4 of your booklet. On March 9, 2018, revised preliminary plans addressing staff comments that were dated February 19, 2018 were addressed, and as well as comments from PLUS and TAC. It is a copy of this current subdivision that can be found in Exhibit T, of which we are presenting before this body this evening. The parcel of land to develop consists of 256.06 acres of land, of which 200.24 acres comprises the subject application. And that's what's shown through here. In the R zoning district, a cluster subdivision is permitted, and we are proposing a cluster subdivision that meets the bulk and density requirements of the GR zoning district. Therefore, all lots will be at least 10,000 square feet with a 30-foot front yard setback and 10-foot side and rear yard setbacks. This will allow the development to be uniform amongst both zoning districts and easily enforced by both the Homeowners Association and Sussex County. The subdivision will consist of 247 single-family fee simple lots that equates to a gross density of 1.23 units per acre or 1.39 units per acre when subtracting out wetlands.
What was that number again?
1.23 gross,
right.
1.39 excluding wetlands.
Okay, thanks, sorry.
That's fine. As you can see on the rendering on the screen, approximately 50 plus acres of residual lands is located between the proposed subdivision and Mulberry Knoll Road. A 50-foot buffer is proposed, but we are requesting that the buffer be landscaped and not forested as required by the code. And that's a strip of land that runs in this general direction here. We are also requesting a 50-foot landscape buffer along Cedar Grove Road. That's this road frontage here. This buffer is provided to have the lot setback from the right-of-way. However, the buffer is and will be encumbered by a shared-use path and existing utility easements. The purpose of this buffer is just to have the lot setback from the right-of-way. So we're asking that be landscaped with some landscaping or perhaps some rolling berms, given the existing utilities that are already in the ground along that roadway for both sewer and water. A 50-foot forested buffer using existing woodlands is proposed along Ward Road. As noted earlier, the project does not include includes non-tidal wetlands, which is in this vicinity here, some non-tidal wetlands back here, tidal wetlands and water bodies, which is Love Creek, and perennial streams, which is a portion of Hetty Fisher Glade, and Welch's Pond is considered wetlands. We propose a voluntary 100-foot forested buffer using existing woodlands from all non-tidal wetlands, tidal wetlands and water bodies, and perennial streams. There are two isolated wetlands, one small piece here, one small piece there, that will have a buffer, but not the full 100 feet. This subdivision has three distinct clusters, with each cluster separated by natural features to be preserved. So you have what I call the eastern cluster, separated by Welch's Pond and a little connection here, the central cluster, which is separated by the unnamed tributary, and then the western cluster, because I'm not unique enough to come up with a better name. A community park is proposed in the open area between lots 9 and 10. That is in this vicinity here. The central cluster, as I said, is located between Love Creek and, the western cluster is located between Love Creek and the unnamed tributary. The main active amenity consisting of a clubhouse and pool is located in this area, shown between lots 214 and 215. There is some consideration of relocating it into the central cluster, so that may be something that may change in future designs, just to inform the commission. But right now, it's proposed to be located in the western cluster. We also propose a boathouse slash kayak launch to be located in the southwest portion of the project, subject to permitting by the Corps of Engineers to allow access to Love Creek. The proposed subdivision will have water provided by Tidewater Utilities, central sewer provided by Sussex County. A regional pump station is located on land that was previously donated by J.G. Townsend Jr. and Company near the intersection of Ward Road and Cedar Grove Road, and that pump station is currently built and in operation by the county. The subdivision proposes sidewalks on one side of the road, and the roads and drainage will meet the current Chapter 99 standards. Stormwater will include a mixture of traditional wet ponds as well as forested buffers and will meet or exceed the stormwater management regulations. The subdivision includes 115.79 acres of open space, over 57% of the project acreage. The project will also preserve approximately 78.13 acres of woods, or over 57% of the existing woodland located on this site.
What was that percentage again?
57% for both. Give you the numbers, Mr. Robertson.
I think it was 78.13 acres. I got the rest of it, but 78.13 acres of woods, which is 57% of the site.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thanks.
Prior to submitting the application to PLUS, our office reached out to DLDOT to review and discuss the traffic impact studies that was completed for a previous application, the campground, on this parcel of land. Exhibit 7 contains that final traffic impact study letter from DLDOT dated June 6, 2013. The campground project was projected to generate 2,488 trips per day, and the proposed 247 single-family subdivision for you tonight will generate 2,389 trips per day. DLDOT determined that a new study was not required because the proposed number of trips are less, virtually the same, that was previously studied, as long as the developer agreed to the proposed recommended improvements. The developer has agreed to all the improvements except for two, and those two were specific to the campground. And obviously it does not apply anymore, so those two recommendations will not be complied with. The required improvements are: improve Cedar Grove Road along the entire site frontage, beginning about the bend, all the way to the recently completed intersection, which is off this map. So I'm gonna go back to this map, to where the realigned Postal Lane, Plantation Road, Cedar Grove Road alignment is. So all that section of Cedar Grove Road is required to be completed by this applicant should this subdivision be approved. Second requirement is to construct a full entrance on Cedar Grove Road. Here at their entrance, which will include a deceleration lane, a protected left turn lane, and bike lanes. Enter into an agreement for the Route 24 Mulberry Knoll intersection improvements and to complete various bicycle, pedestrian, and transit improvements. The proposed subdivision far exceeds the requirements as outlined in Chapter 115 of the Sussex County Code for a cluster subdivision. The last item to review are the requirements of Chapter 99-9C. A written response has been prepared that addresses all 17 items of the county code. This written response is included in Appendix 5. I will not go through them in their entirety, but will close by saying the project provides 100-foot voluntary buffers from non-tidal wetlands, perennial and tidal water bodies. Lots do not encroach wetlands. The project minimally impacts the 100-year floodplain. It provides 57% open space consisting of 115.79 acres of land. It will be connected to public water and sewer and is integrated into the neighboring properties with appropriate buffers, landscape screens, and a density of 1.23 units per acre. At this time, Mr. Lene will present the environmental report and findings.
Questions of Reagan, ladies and gentlemen. If they're not, I would note briefly that...
Mr. Byer, just can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
And just again, clarification, I was trying to write notes on this. You said that there's a 100-foot buffer from wetlands, but then you said there's a couple of exceptions.
They're isolated wetlands that really, Ed, correct me if I'm wrong, they're not subject to the Army Corps jurisdiction. Okay. They're just isolated wetlands, so they're the two excluded from the 100-foot buffer.
Okay. I just am concerned if I don't know what the commission's going to do. If they deny it, it doesn't matter, but if they approve it and we say there has to be a 100-foot buffer from all wetlands, you know, down the line, somebody's going to say there needs to be a 100-foot buffer from them. Is there a way to...
The condition would be excluding isolated wetlands, because okay. That's a technical term for those two pockets.
Okay. Thanks. Sorry, Mr. Byer, didn't mean...
Not at all. What I was going to say isn't important anyway, but for Mr. Ross's benefit. In 2014, you'll recall that the major concerns were crime and drugs generated by an RV park and a campground. From this file so far, the only concern appears to be decimation of salamanders and frogs. Times have changed, and with that, Ed, if you want to come over, talk about salamanders and frogs.
My name's Ed Lenave. My company's Environmental Resources. I'm an environmental consultant there and a professional wetland scientist, and I've been involved with this property a number of years. I guess before I get started, I'm going to say something to Mr. Robinson's question that he just asked. There are two little areas. There's actually an area of this site that was used as a dredge spoil area years ago by Denrec. And so there's two little isolated pockets that they're not developing up to, but that's the only area where it's less than 100-foot buffer. I'm going to testify quite a bit about Welsh's Pond, which on that exhibit is the blue area. It's about 7 acres or so. And that's also isolated, but it's technically not regulated as a wetland by the Corps of Engineers or Denrec. It's wetlands, however. There's the pond is waters and there's wetlands that surround the pond. And there will be a 100-foot buffer at minimum on the pond, so I wanted to...
Where are then the two that aren't that? Is there a way, I'd like to say, you know, such and such a corner, or...?
Well, it would be shown on the wetlands delineation. It's actually shown and labeled on this exhibit right here. So there is a buffer that goes around them, that, and all this woods will be left. But technically, in terms of the 100-foot buffer from federally regulated wetlands, those are less.
Okay.
Than any other area.
Okay.
So I guess at the start of this project, my firm and myself personally did a very detailed wetland delineation, marking the entire wetland boundary, which was surveyed. A report's been prepared, and that's been being submitted to the Corps of Engineers. The results of that were that 170.32 acres of the site is uplands, which is about 85% of the site. There were a variety of different wetlands, including Welsh's Pond, that are 30.37 acres of the site. And again, that totals up to the 200.69 acres of the entire site. As part of that assessment, we looked at the types of soils that are on the site, and as Ring testified to, the site is pretty well elevated. Very little of it where the development is occur is below the 100-year floodplain. Almost all of it is above. It's a well elevated landform, and the soil types out there for the most part are some of the most development friendly soil types that you can find in the county in terms of good seasonal depth to groundwater and good percolation rates. There are, you know, a variety of soils. There's a number of hydric or wetland soils that have a lot of development limitations. However, those are all contained within the wetlands and certainly within the buffers to the wetlands. The one activity that's going to actually, and it is permitted under code, the recreational use in the buffer areas that are proposed, there is going to be, again, a small kayak launch. It wouldn't extend, it will be less than 50 feet extending out from the shoreline. And there's a very nice natural landing area, which is located right here, where you can see that the uplands almost, or actually do, touch, physically touch the water. So that amenity can be constructed without any impacts to state or federally regulated wetlands. Wanted to mention a little bit about what is required as a standard in Sussex County for wetland buffers. So in Sussex County, our code basically requires a buffer from just state-regulated wetlands. It does not require a buffer from federally regulated wetlands. It also requires a buffer from the ordinary high water mark or mean high water line of tidal waters, or the ordinary high water mark of the two little stream courses that go through the site. So, and you know, you can see that in a number of the surrounding developments, that's the buffer standard that was adhered to. So this site really, with these buffers are measured from 100 feet from the federal wetland boundary, not the state wetland boundary. So this, the wetland buffers that are provided voluntarily for this project are really exceptional as compared to any other project that I've been involved with the county. If we look at the total area of buffers and wetlands that will be protected, this does not include the other open space areas of the project, but just in terms of the wetlands and the voluntary buffers being provided, it's 42% of the site, or just about a little over 85 acres. I did mention Welch's Pond, which is a water body about 7.34 acres. That has some importance for three species, and this was, you know, some of the comment letters from state and a couple other interested parties. There's three species of amphibians: the eastern tiger salamander, Cope's great tree frog, and barking tree frog, where they have a record of those species utilizing Welch's Pond in their life cycle and then wooded areas around Welch's Pond. These are not, however, federally listed threatened and endangered species or critical habitats. In your booklet and in my report, there is a letter that's very recent from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service from February 2018. You know, stating that there are no federally listed threatened and endangered species. So these are rare species in the state of Delaware. They're not necessarily, they're more common in the southern states south of Delaware, but they're rare in our region. So part of the thinking about buffers and in the comments, and in the comments you received, there's, and quoted in the comments from DENREC, there was a study about 3 years old that they quoted about the importance of, and why Welch's Pond is attractive to these species. It's a fishless pond. It's isolated, so it is such that it kind of dries down during the summer and then has water seasonally in it. So that provides a unique area for these types of amphibians to have a life cycle where they basically start their life in the pond and then migrate and live in the wooded areas around the pond. And what that study identified was that the most important area, or I called it in the report I wrote, it's in your booklet, the primary amphibian protection area, is about a 540-foot radius around the pond. And then kind of secondary to that, where there may be some use, but not all that much use, is about 1,000 feet from the pond. So 80% of the habitat use of these amphibian species would be within that 540-foot zone. So I guess what we strove to do is try to set aside a reasonable portion of that zone for as buffer and available habitat for those species. And so that's shown on the buffer exhibit that's up here now. And so essentially you see the pond itself, which is the waters, and then there's the brown area around the pond, which is all forest within the 540-foot zone that would be preserved under this buffer management plan. And that would include some wetlands in the upper area of that tributary. And then there's a reddish area adjacent to that, and that's the 1,000-foot of the secondary zone that would be preserved. So excluding the wetlands and wetlands buffers from other, there's that primary and zone that would be protected is about 30 acres in size. And there's another 15.83 in the zone between 540 feet and 1,000 feet that would be preserved. The thing I wanted to point out about the pond too is that on a good amount of the pond, if we look at the pond as a circle and think about the percentage of the pond that's really being altered by this project, I can tell you that about 76% of the perimeter of the pond is really not being altered hardly at all or significantly. Most of the woods that's around the northerly part of the pond is all being preserved. If you see the open space parcel, that's a business that currently operates called Coastal Towing. And that is what it is, and I'll speak about that in a minute. A lot of the pond, again, a lot of that frontage around the pond is farm field with a fringe of woods. That fringe of woods is being preserved. It's basically the area to the northwest and kind of to the west of the pond where there's available woods adjacent to this 540-foot zone that's available. So we're preserving about, of that 540-foot zone that's actually wooded, we're preserving about 60% of that. One of the things I wanted to mention was that, you know, the comments that we received from the state are based upon records, and the records I'm kind of very confident are fairly old. I don't think there's been a recent look at this pond, and I don't think it's been recently looked at since Coastal Towing came and operated. And the comments really try to present the pond as a very pristine place. And I think to some degree that's true, but it's certainly impacted. And I got a couple photographs that I'd like to show, Ring. Maybe we'll just take a look at the photographs. So part of the pond, you know, one of the things we see here, it really isn't that much of an open water body. And over the years, what you see there is kind of the edge of the pond. It'll be two photographs. You can see that tall reed, which is something called Phragmites. It's kind of designates a degraded habitat. And not all the pond is like that, but you know, a good amount of the pond really has now transpired where Phragmites has taken hold and occupies a good part of it. Go ahead, maybe the neck. And so that's a similar view of the Phragmites area within the pond. That's a picture from the road of the Coastal Towing facility, which I think kind of came on board in about 1993. And essentially unfortunately there's no stormwater management at the Coastal Towing facility. And so you can imagine it's a tow yard. And I can tell you for the most part that the water runs from the back of the yard and pretty much runs into the pond. So maybe you could go to the next one. There's the back of the facility. There's kind of a couple swales that come off of the paved area at the rear of it that, you know, you see that one swale that drains directly into the pond without any stormwater management controls. That's another similar picture. Go to the last one. That's kind of the same thing. That's kind of another view of just behind Coastal Towing. in that drainage path and then showing that area, large area of Fragmites that now occupies the pond to the west of that. So it's a little less than a pristine environment. You can show those last two. That's just a picture of the upland landing where the kayak launch would go. And that's kind of another similar picture, one more. And that's probably the type of kayak launch, something very similar to that. That's one the state of Delaware built for a canoe kayak here. So I guess unless there's questions for me, that pretty much wraps it up.
We'll see if, when you all get done your presentation, we'll see what questions we have.
Good evening, Nick Hammonds with Jack Lingo Asset Management. And what I hope to do this evening, very briefly, is to just walk you around the neighborhood and talk about where our proposed project sits and then some of the communities that have been recently approved and or constructed in comparison to our property. So to reiterate what Ring said earlier, our property sits along the curve of Cedar Grove Road, about midway between the intersection of Plantation Road to the north and the east, and Robinsonville Road to the west. And as noted, our proposal is for 247 units on about 200 acres, and that's 1.23 units per acre from a density standpoint. Moving across Love Creek and to Robinsonville Road, you have Tidewater Landing. This community began construction in 2017. It's approved for 213 units on about 140 acres, and that's a density of just over 1.5 units per acre. As you head north on Robinsonville Road, you can see in the exhibit you have Coastal Club right here. That's a 600 unit project at build out, has multiple product types. They are half or three quarters of the way through that build out. And then back over to Robinsonville Road, if you make a right onto Cedar Grove Road, again, the road where our project is located, on the north side of Cedar Grove Road sits Kindleton, which is this parcel right here, previously called Shepherd's Walk. It was recently back in and received preliminary approval for 90 single-family homes on 40 acres, or about 2.2 units per acre. On the south side is the Retreat at Love Creek, and that community is 161 units. So continuing down Cedar Grove Road, again, past our project, and then making a right onto Mulberry Knoll Road, you come to a 124-acre parcel, which is right here, and that is known as the Bella Terra community. This was also recently approved for 269 units on that 124 acres, which comes to a density of 2.2 units per acre. And I'd say the other recently approved community of significance is out on 24, just west of the new school is Saddle Ridge. That is an 81-unit community, recently started construction. Four or five houses are underway. That's 40 acres, so just over 2 units per acre. So in closing, as you can see, the community that we're proposing at 1.23 units per acre is significantly less dense than some of the other housing in the area. However, it is consistent from a housing type standpoint in that it's all single family lots of at least 10,000 square feet. We feel we've put together a very responsible land plan with considerable open space and tree preservation, the landscaping and wetland buffers that meet and or exceed in most cases the jurisdictional body requirements. And we also feel it's a very attractive land plan that will cater to the considerable demand in the area for well-designed single-family housing. And in closing, it does meet, we believe, all of the goals of the county subdivision ordinance.
Thanks,
gents, that's the application. In my experience, this is a unique design with modest density and with an extraordinary amount of open space. No lots front on Love Creek. There is protection and preservation of wetlands and forest. It's important to Denrec and others. But somehow each lot fronts on open space. That's neat design. All told, as Frank told you, 57% of the site is in open space. One thing I can't resist saying in closing is this corridor. I guess that's pink. Interconnects with the next property. We're not suggesting that's interconnectivity for humans. It's for salamanders and frogs. There are some proposed findings of fact and conditions in Exhibit 12, and that's all we have.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Byer. Just stand nearby. We'll see what the questions the commissioners have. We'll start with Mrs. Hoey Stevenson.
I have a couple questions that I think are just probably just my ignorance of how things work. Mr. Lardner, one for you.
Yes, ma'am.
One of them, you said you're going to explain to me what it is you're doing with the lands that are in the floodplain, please.
The intent for the lots within the floodplain would to grade those lots so they would be above the 100-year floodplain elevation. So if the floodplain elevation was 6, we would attempt to grade the lots at or above a 6, so those lots could, in theory, be part of the floodplain and would not be impacted by the floodplain.
Okay. All right.
That is not a code requirement. That is something that we would attempt to do as part of the design. But it would comply with the county code requirement for the floodplain.
It would also comply with just the recent grading standards, where there'd be a bulk grading plan and there's an individual lot grading plan. So it's not also not as though these are going to be elevated to then drain on everybody else that's on their neighbors either. So this will be one of the relatively first ones that'll go through with those new standards.
Right. Well, and I'm sure, knowing Sussex County, the people living there, at some day, if we approve this, would be very happy to know that their lot is not underwater most of the year. When I was reading through this, and I read the whole thing, one of the things that Denrec was asking about was a green tech rather than open water, for the stormwater management, that they would appreciate, they would rather have that.
Denrec is promoting green technology, and green technology has its places depending on soil characters, everything else. Wet ponds have multiple benefits to providing stormwater, nutrient, phosphorus, sediment removal. It has a lot of positive value for the views of the community with an open water body. A lot of the green technology, some can look good and some can look not so good, depending how well it's kept. Because green technology is infiltration and wetland buffers, everything else, and it's not always the right solution for us. We think the wet ponds will have a very positive effect on the community and fits in well with the nearby waters. I have a feeling groundwater is going to be somewhat of an elevation issue near the water bodies. But it's green technology to think about, and it's something they ask for. But wet ponds is one of multiple tools allowed to comply with stormwater.
Are you saying it's less maintenance to have the pond than the green tech?
But my opinion, wet ponds are much easier to maintain than a green technology facility.
Okay. Thank you. Again, this is not my area of expertise. So as for one of the things that you said you were going to be recommending was nutrient management for open space.
Denrec says if you have open space more than 10 acres and you apply nutrients, you need to have a nutrient management plan.
Okay.
So if nutrients will be applied, and I doubt they will be, but if they are, then a nutrient management plan will be prepared and submitted to Denrec as required by Denrec regulations.
Would you be working with Denrec with because I know Denrec's worried about the frogs and the salamanders and the herpetologist is, and sadly I actually know quite a bit about these, but anyway. that's what kind of a nerd I am. Would Would you be working with Demarec for the lots that are adjacent to Welch's Pond for any, because I know when people move in, they're going to be wanting to put fertilizer on their lots that would could affect them. Was there any way?
The 100-foot buffer will absorb and treat the nutrients applied by that lot. So we're not reaching out to Demarec to discuss that. The 100-foot buffer is more than enough to handle any nutrient loads that may come about for someone living on that lot.
Okay, and now I drive by that lot every day, but I have not walked out to Welch's Pond. Is it a place that people would be wanting to walk out to, or are you going to have it tied off so that people can't go out there to, or, you know, is there any way to?
It's not going to be fenced off. It's going to be left in its natural condition the way it is right now. And as Mr. Lene has stated right now, it's got a bunch of phragmites in it, and you know, the pond is going to be how the pond is. We're planning on no changes to it, no change to grading, which is why we're keeping the forested buffer completely intact the way it is.
Okay. And that would be part of the Homeowners Association things, that this is to stay as it is.
There will be an open space management plan that will be put in the hands of every homeowner.
Okay.
And the association.
And what's up with the residual lands?
There's no plan at this time.
Plan. Think lima beans.
I'm sure it will stay that way.
Not for long.
Yeah,
but you notice there are two stubs. Should that land ever be developed, there is a potential for interconnectivity. But right now, there is no development plans for that residual land.
Okay. Let me see. Did I write down any other questions? No. Actually, you did a great job of, as I was writing down questions, of answering them in here. That, you know, oh no, we're doing 100-foot. That's plenty, and we've got it connected with the trees, so the frogs can get there, and the boat kayak launch area is only going to be on Love Creek, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
So that's all I have right now. I might come back to you, but that's it. Thank you.
If you think of something else, you can always chime back in. Mr. Hopkins.
I have walked out to the pond, and like you say, with all the phragmites and everything out there, it one doesn't really think of it as a pond when they look out over it. So I guess it. So because of the species, you can't dig it out.
Now, altering the pond would just alter the species using the pond and everything else. So it's better just to leave it in its natural state as it's existed for how many ever years now.
Now, what about the runoff from the towing outfit? Are you mitigating that at all?
No, sir. We are not touching any runoff from coastal towing. It's too much reliability risk to start trying to treat another property's runoff and put that burden on the homeowner association.
And there's just the one access onto Cedar Grove.
Yes, sir.
And it's not an option to have another access into Ward.
We had an access to Ward Road when the campground, and during that 4.5 hours of testimony, 3 hours was probably all about not having traffic on Ward Road, and thus we do not propose to put an entrance on Ward Road and only have access on Cedar Grove Road, which really is much wider and more able to handle the traffic than Ward Road is.
Yeah, that's a tight little road. I agree.
But at some point, I guess theoretically, if that residual lands doesn't stay in lima bean production and there's interconnectivity, that's going to create other points of access.
Right, there could be another point of access out on Mulberry Knoll Road. That's correct.
Is that something you all would consider to have, like, some type of an emergency access on the ward?
We've kind of kicked that question around, and same with construction traffic and
not even so much construction traffic, but if there's a, you know, if there's some crisis, you know, this kind of been a topic of discussion here recently, and I think we've even got somebody came up with a design, you know, where there's graded aggregate base.
Right, it's a forested road, and when the campground came about, not to keep bringing that application up, but it does merit at least discussing, there was a emergency access road there, but the question was, is how do we gate it off so it doesn't become used by everybody? So we're not saying yea or nay, but it's something we've...
I think what happened is we deferred to the fire marshal, and given the outcome of that process, it never went anywhere.
And I think that something that we've looked at is one, it's almost a disguised egress on for emergencies where there's actually topsoil and, mm-hmm. you know, maybe an inch of sod or something. And,
yes, sir.
So would this be another case where you would defer to the fire marshal if the fire marshal said, we'd really like that, you could put a...
I think that would be in the best judgment of the fire marshal, emergency service, whether they thought another access would require. It's not something we really want to promote on the Ward Road or to the residents along Ward Road.
Okay.
And hopefully we never need emergency services, but that's highly unlikely.
We always hope for the best,
yes,
but we've got a plan for the worst.
Understood.
So. No other questions.
Mr. Hudson?
Kind of leads into my one question that I have. Is Ward Road a private road or a county road?
It's a state-maintained road. It's about 18 feet wide at its widest point.
Okay. Thanks. I was just curious if it was private or not. Thanks.
Is this going to be phased, the construction?
From a approval standpoint, it will not be phased, but during construction, it will be phased. There's a 20-acre requirement with Conservation District, so there will be construction phases from that standpoint, but this whole thing is getting approved as one complete subdivision.
I understand, but do you have any idea of how you would like to phase it? I mean, is the west side going to be constructed first, east side, you know?
We would come from the road back, so we would start out with these lots and then come back here, and that was a little bit of what,
in case of your hand moves, start with these lots.
Was a little bit about of,
there was a hand moving
right. What Mr. Lardner was speaking to earlier about the potential for moving the amenity into the first half of the project because of the infrastructure that'll be required to get back to this side of the project.
Gotcha. And the reason I ask that question is because by the time you get to, say, phase 3 or 2 or 4, whatever it might be, the west side across the unnamed creek there, you may desire at that point to have a construction entrance off of the side road. And if that were the case, and DelDOT was to agree to have a construction entrance, you know, perhaps that could be then gated and locked with a key lockbox given to the fire department, and that would be your emergency ingress and egress, and you
right.
wouldn't be driving through the rest of your development in your final phase or two phases of project. And I just throw that out there for contemplation as you go through your site plan. And lockboxes are a normal thing with fire companies, emergency companies, and that prevents people from just using it willy-nilly. One thing I was surprised that Mrs. Hoey Stevenson didn't ask was, because it's always her question, but she forgot about the bus stop. Do you? I know it's
there was my head.
Yeah, where were you thinking, Kim? But I know that she's going to think of it before the night's over, so let's get it out of the way.
Bus stops are a very interesting conversation, and the reason why I say that is bus stop locations, walkability to bus stops is all controlled by the state of Delaware and state law. If you are a high school student, you're allowed to walk a little further than an elementary school student versus a preschool student. So I've had conversations with school districts. I'm like, well, you can show a bus stop there, but I can't guarantee that's where it's going to be because it's all based on students and everything else. So we provide the plans to the school district, and as students sign up for school, they determine the bus stop. So the ideal location would be here at the main entrance where we could provide a bus stop. However, depending on the number of students, if the students are back here, then a bus may need to come in, and that's where this transportation manager of the school district determines the bus stops. So it's not like we're trying to ignore it, it's just we don't know now, and a bus stop today may not be the same place as next year or the year after that. So it is a truly moving target on bus stops.
Okay.
Actually, I do know the rules on that bus stop because we've been through it so many times.
You okay?
Yeah, I'd hate for kids to be. I just know, we'll be fine with it for now.
And then the density, the residual area, is that included in the 200 and whatever acres?
No, sir.
That's not. It's separate.
Not.
Okay. And I notice you have two stubbed roads there. You're going to have a 50-foot buffer there. I guess if the residual lands were developed, then access to the stub roads would be feasible?
Yes, sir.
And that will be included in your HOA documents and whatever, so people realize that's potential to happen. Okay, and then if you don't mind, if you get through this process this evening, to just contact the post office about whether they want a central mail station or not for your development.
Yes, sir.
Or where they might want it. That's not our bailiwick, that's theirs. Okay.
And that is a common thing they're going to now as a central, and we will contact them.
It is. We need to save them every penny we can.
Yes,
while
sir.
They still have pennies to save. Anyone else from the commission have any questions?
Ms. I actually want to kind of follow up on some of the questions already asked. One was, and you may not have the answer to this yet, but as you go through your stormwater, will you be directing any stormwater management to Welch's?
No, ma'am.
No.
Rephrase that. The only water going to Welch's would be the backyards of the lots. There's no other proposed drainage going to Welch's Pond.
And then, and this kind of builds off of the question about the Phragmites along the shoreline of the pond. Is there any consideration for treating to try to eradicate that, or
we would defer to Mr. Lanay's advice.
Is that an issue for the?
There are some herbicides that can be used. I guess that's something we maybe coordinate with DENREC on, just to see. They are certified for use in an aquatic environment. I mean, one is called Rodeo, and that's the most commonly used. And it's applied at certain times of year to the tops of the plants. And it has about an 80% success rate after the first year. And then, it becomes a thing that you have to manage. So it's not a one thing, treat it one time and it goes away. It requires, really an active management plan. So that would be something I think the homeowners could decide to do, and probably they'd want to coordinate that with DENREC, because the view is that it is a sensitive habitat. So
thank you.
None,
thank you.
Ms. Cornwell.
None, thank you.
Mr. Roberts.
Two, actually. So parts of this are GR. GR allows manufactured homes. Do you all have any plans for manufactured homes?
No, the restrictive covenants that are prepared are for single-family stick-built homes.
All right, just wanted to get that on the record. And I'm curious, looking at where the pump station's up at the top, is that
out part? That's that white rectangle.
Yeah. Right there.
And with the wetlands, how is the sewer and all connected to that? Because it's kind of away from all the
lots. That's an interesting question. I was going to try to stay away from
it. Oh, all right, sorry.
Sounds like a county engineering problem to me.
Oh, it is. I'm just more curious,
so,
that's all.
When this pump station was first contemplated by the county, we were working with them to find a way to gravity serve this entire property. There is actually a 21-inch gravity line that runs along Cedar Grove Road to that pump station, hence one of the easements that I was referring to earlier. However, the pump station wasn't set deep enough to accommodate this gravity sewer, so we are now proposing two pump stations. One down in this location here, which will pump up into the gravity line somewhere, and there'll be another pump station here in the back that will pump up and into that pump station. So everything will make its way to that pump station through two pump station force mains, and there'll be some directional drills and whatnot to get it there. We do not propose any open cuts across the wetlands or the buffers.
Yeah, because it just looked like an interesting way to design, just where that was in relation to everything else. So
didn't quite work out the plan.
Yeah, right.
But if I may, to answer a previous question, now you're talking about how to deal with these isolated wetlands. You could probably call them out as shown based on a lot number, and we can figure a way to
No, because you said there were two, and I didn't realize that there. I was thinking that's one, but there's actually two right there, and I looked at the plan and saw that and saw what lots there were next to. So, no, that helped, yeah. Thanks. That's all
I have.
Okay,
gentlemen, we'll see if anyone has any interest in your application. I will say that I'm impressed with the amount of respect you've given to buffers on all the wetlands and environmental areas. It's well above and beyond the ordinance and rules that we have. Anyone here like to speak in favor of this application, subdivision 2017-20? In favor. Anyone like to speak in opposition to this application? Yes, sir.
I just have a question.
Yeah, come up.
Whether you're in favor or against or have a question, please come up.
Question.
Now you have to come to the mic because we're recording this for posterity. You're going to be famous. This is over the World Wide Web live. We need your name and address, sir.
And my name is Michael Weiss. I live at 32749 Harbor Drive in Lewis. So I live at the retreat at Love Creek, right up the Love Creek. Now, on some maps you have this boathouse, and others you don't. And I just want to know sort of what you're anticipating, how big this thing is supposed to be, and what's it for. I mean, Love Creek in the summer is about a foot deep. And if you're thinking about, you know, larger rowboats or anything with a motor on it, it's really inappropriate. And I want to know what kind of runoff the boathouse might create for Henny Fisher Glade and also Love Creek.
Okay. We can ask that question for you.
Thank you.
Who would like to address that question?
So with respect to the boathouse, it's obviously not designed yet at this point, but thinking something small, shaded, we'd have to talk about whether or not it would be sewered. And then with respect to it's going to be designed for a kayak launch to come out, and the kayak launch would be much like what Mr. Lene showed during his presentation. Does that address the question?
Can I follow up on that? Just so, because one of the things that I think with some of those, even on Love Creek, but other places, we've said that there should not be any motorized boats of any sort. And I'm reading this, I can't remember if it was in there or not. I mean, are you all okay with that? That it's just kayaks and things that you're
paddling?
Yes. Okay. And the other thing, because with the boathouse, I actually didn't pick up on that. And where does that fit in? Because you all proposed a schedule for the construction of amenities. You know, it talks about, I guess it's, I don't know, well, that's the community parks base near Welch's Pond, that's different. The primary community clubhouse pool is constructed by the 130th C of O, and it says all other recreation areas shall be constructed not later than the certificates of occupancy for 75% of the lots.
It's that category, Mr.
Okay.
Robinson.
All right, just so we know if it gets approved where to plug that in so that there's not an issue down the line.
Okay. And as far as runoff, the boathouse would not have a whole lot of runoff. It would have some rooftop disconnection. It could be going through the forested buffer filter strip, or maybe able to tie it into the stormwater manager system and then treat it at a wet pond. But I don't have those details at that time, but those are the available options at this preliminary stage.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Yes, sir.
Tom Tully, 32738 Arberg Drive, Lewis, Delaware. That's the retreat at Love Creek. Just two questions. The blue areas, are those all ponds? There's 11 of them. Are those all ponds in that graph?
There's a proposed stormwater ponds within the development. Yeah.
They are. So you're going to have 11 stormwater ponds. Is that correct?
Three, four.
Well, you count up the blues.
Yeah.
7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, it is 11.
That it would be subject to Sussex Conservation District's review and approval of the stormwater management plan. As that occurs, excuse me, I doubt it'll be more than 11. Who knows? But it may be less. It just depends on what their calculations are in the final designs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. My second question is: what is the width of the streets?
They're meeting county specifications, county road specifications.
Which is?
It's 24, but is that I can't remember off the top of my head.
That's
the
cartway.
That's the paved area, and the rights-of-way is
50.
50, yeah.
Yeah, so the right-of-way is 50. The paved street is 24, 12-foot lanes.
24.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
The reason I had to think about that is, we just changed our code on that, so I had to stop and think what the dimensions are.
Anyone else want to speak in opposition? Yes, sir.
James Schneider, 20601 Annandale Drive, Lewis, Delaware. First, I want to congratulate the PEEP group all on an excellent presentation and a much better development than what was originally proposed a couple of years ago. My only comment is, when we're talking about the number of houses that are going to be built between this and the four of the developments, it's another 900 houses in this area. An area that has become very crowded with traffic over the years. And I was just wondering, when is something going to be done with the traffic conditions in our area? And I hear in the proposal requirements to improve Cedar Grove, but what about the other areas? And shouldn't new developments be responsible for adding more money to the overall construction of roads in our area? Thank you.
Sure. Well, in response, I mean, the applicant did testify of the road improvements they're going to be required to make in this specific application. We often ask ourselves, when are the road improvements going to take place in Sussex County? We have roads that have been planned for improvement since 1970 that still have not been improved today, some 48 years later. And to get an answer to that question, you need to go to Dover and speak to your General Assembly or to DLDOT.
And I would just add, Mr. Ross, for the benefit of the public and this gentleman in particular, that more than anything else has been a real topic of our comprehensive plan process that we're currently underway. The commission spent a lot of time with DLDOT making the same point that you just made and Mr. Ross just made. I think our comp plan is going to come out with certainly more of a focus on that than it has in the past. The county's aware of that, and not just with regard to this subdivision, but as you stated, in the roads in general. And I will say that the commission, but certainly also county councils, is looking at ways that we can address that or force DLDOT to.
I think this is about the eighth or ninth time in my lifetime that I've seen a 5 points commission.
It's always been
on top of the list. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Hearing none, anyone on the commission have any questions?
Just one. I mean, I am concerned about Welch's Pond and the wetland or the area of that, and just some protection for it in perpetuity, because my experience with Homeowners Association is once they take over, they'll be like, hey, that'd be a really nice place. We could
go skiing.
We could mow that over, and that would be lovely. So how could we, can we put any protections on that?
There will be an open space management plan in print. Arguably, it could be incorporated in the restrictive covenants, but every time the plan needed to be amended for one reason or another, you'd have to amend the restrictions, and nobody wants to have to go through that process. Maybe the better course would be to share a copy of that plan with the Soil Conservation Service and with DENREC, so they have it in their files. So if there's any change at all on site, someone can react.
Would there be a way, Mr. Byer, to put in the conditions and on the final site plan, the record plan, that it's a non-disturbance area? Just put a note.
I think so, but first you've got to get past how you treat the problems that are in the pond right now.
Right.
Because if you treat the frag bodies with Roundup, you're disturbing the pond.
I know. Well, that's what I was wondering.
Well, yeah, I understand. That's what I'm trying to figure out, a way that they would have to work with DENREC or work with an environmentalist.
You want to talk to the people out at Soil Conservation about whether they've had this experience before.
Yeah, we've reached out to them as part of the approval process. I know on previous record plats we've placed a note that it had to be preserved and it's perpetuity, but normal maintenance or routine maintenance, those type of things could be added. But I don't want to just blindly say we can do that without at least talking to some of the experts to get their opinion.
Right.
So
that's the kind of thing I would be looking for, though. That
when it comes to phragmites, you got to...
Right, phragmites are
it's evasive.
Awful.
Once you've got one, they're never going away.
We fight it on our farms all the time.
Yeah. It's an ongoing war.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else?
Thank you. That was
Is that it? Anyone else? Mrs. Walls? Mr. Whitehouse?
No, thank you.
Ms. Caldwell?
No, thank you.
Mr. Robertson?
Nope, thanks.
Mr. Byard, I hope you get to feeling better. I know you're not feeling well tonight. You're above the ground, as they say. We're going to close the public hearing, and you're welcome to stay with us this evening, see if we make a decision, or you may call the office in the morning. Our next public